Now let's look at the importance of psychological anchors and transference regarding the mutual fate bond. As you know, the experience of being a hostage does not end with the resolution of the situation. As with PTSD, many hostages relive the experience through daily psychological anxiety and sleepless nights. Studies ascertain how potential hostages might better cope with the experience of being in captivity. One of the greatest difficulties with any alien situation is the inability to find psychological anchors that we all require in order to deal with life. Uncertainty is most difficult in anxiety-ridden circumstances, as you are well aware. The degree of anxiety produced in such situations is said to be so great that even situations that produce clear-cut negative expectations are perceived as being easier to manage than uncertain situations with a more positive outcome. The captive may anticipate and understand what his captors are doing and what is likely to follow. To the extent that this is possible, and that the process is reinforced by the hostage having made accurate predictions, the level of uncertainty, disorientation, and anxiety is sharply reduced. It is also important for the individual to make some mental link to the outside world. To further explain PTSD resulting from terrorism and other traumas, let's look once again at transference from the point of view of time in captivity and a mutual fate bond that develops. The perception that time is on the side of the negotiators is based on the psychological concept of transference. As you know, transference is a mental process through which a sense of closeness and attachment develops between the hostage and his captors. As time wears on, both captive and captor find themselves locked into a mutual fate. The captive feels powerless before the captor, but he or she begins to identify with him and perceives that his hopes for survival reside with the captor. The captor is seen as having the opportunity to offer life to the captive, if only the authorities will agree to the captor's demands. The fact that the captive has been put by the captor in a situation where the captive's life has become a commodity to exchange, interestingly enough, is ignored. It's no longer the captor, but the negotiators who are perceived to be standing in the way of survival and responsible for the prospect of death. The transference process is not necessarily asymmetrical. A similar bond can be created between captor and the hostage. The impact of sharing physical space under conditions of mutual crisis and stress build intimacy and an emotional bond that generally serves as a proactive measure against the hostage being killed. The strength of this bond is said to increase with time. In fact, it is commonly said among those experienced with hostage negotiations that if a hostage is not killed within the first 15 minutes of an episode, the odds are that they will not be killed. There is yet another reason why time is perceived to be on the side of the negotiators. As the situation progresses and the prospect of imminent death continues, all but suicidally inclined captors desire some way out of the situation. Also, as time wears on, the police can rotate personnel. The hostage takers, unless well-equipped, trained, and in significant numbers, will find that their capacity to act decisively and think clearly will erode with time. However, the process of transference is not simply a function of time. It also depends upon the nature of the interaction between the hostage taker and the hostage. All things being equal, the longer the period of time in which the interaction between hostage and captor takes place, the greater the degree of transference. However, if the interaction is hostile, transference generally will not take place. When treating a PTSD client, the professional code of ethics states to respect the client's self-determination. However, in the next case study, ask yourself, is there a question in your mind regarding the actions of the passengers on this hijacked plane? interviews conducted by the FBI with passengers on a TWA flight hijacked to Paris graphically illustrate the relationship between transference and the quality of interaction between hostage and terrorist. One of the skyjackers was described as abusive, arrogant, and threatening. He had a habit of continually touching the phony dynamite brought on board in such a fashion as to add to the passenger's anxiety. As a result of these threatening actions, individuals who had substantial contact with him did not experience transference. In direct contrast, however, another one of the skyjackers was warm and positive in his reactions with the passengers who had contact with him. However, transference will generally not take place when there are predetermined racial or ethnic hostilities between captive and captor. Israeli officers indicated that there has been not one instance of transference by an Israeli hostage towards an Arab captor. Transference will also be precluded when the hostage is capable of maintaining some intellectual distance, which enables the objective assessment of one's plight as having been used by one's captors. Here's an example of objective assessment. Once again, note this incident took place prior to September 11th, which will become evident as the story unfolds. Richard Brockman, a 29-year-old psychiatric resident at New York's Columbia Presbyterian Hospital, was aboard TWA Flight 355 when the terrorist seized it. In an article titled Notes While Being Hijacked, he detailed his response to 33 terrifying hours on board the flight. At the conclusion of the episode, the intercom blared and Brockman recalled, "This is the captain speaking. His voice was calm, no cracks. We have all been through an incredible experience, but it's over for us now. No one is hurt. However, it is not over for our hijackers. Their ordeal is just beginning. They have a cause. They are brave, committed people, idealistic, dedicated people, like the people who helped to shape our country. They are trying to do the same for theirs. I think we should give them a hand." Dr. Brockman writes, "The hijackers are smiling. The audience is applauding." Quite a shocking story given recent events, I admit. For Dr. Brockman, even in this surge of relief, he could not develop the emotional affinity for the hijackers that many of the other passengers did. To the end, he was distant and objective, aware that his life had been negotiated for some higher objective in which he was only a participant as an accident of circumstance. In debriefing passengers and crew, agents of the FBI noted that individuals who actively, consciously went out of their way to interact with the terrorist were most likely to experience transference. You might keep this in mind as you think in terms of a PTSD reaction following the incident. In summary, it appears from case-by-case observation that a number of variables enter into determining whether transference will take place. Number one, the length of time the hostage and captors are confined. Number two, the quality of the interaction, were the hostages well treated. Number three, the existence of a predetermined racial or ethnic hostility between hostage and captors. And number four, the predisposition on the part of some hostages to seek out and relate to captors. This information may help you should you have the experience of treating a client who has been a hostage and perhaps the resulting PTSD that they suffer from. Of course, one of the most publicized episodes of transference by a hostage to her captors is that demonstrated by newspaper heiress Patty Hearst, who not only took a lover from among her captors, but also provided them with covering gunfire when they were about to be seized in a shoplifting. Patty Hearst's behavior was different only in degree from what is commonly observed in hostages under long-term stress. And if Patty Hearst's responses were more extreme, it is also true that the conditions of her captivity, both in terms of severity of deprivation and duration, were also more extreme. These factors were probably exacerbated by her age and lack of experience. Here's an ethical point for you to ponder regarding these case studies of transference. If you have experienced a loss due to acts of terrorism, what do you feel you would need to do if you were to treat a client who experienced a positive transference towards a terrorist? Would you consider referring the client to another therapist? Question 8. What four variables enter into determining whether transference between hostage and captors will take place?